World Cup qualifiers. With the addition of quality players, the House hopes that the Indonesian national team will be able to compete more strongly at the international level. To celebrate International Women's Day on March 8, 2025, the United Nations Resident Coordinator in Indonesia, Gita Sabarwal, emphasized the importance of accelerating gender equality across various sectors. Ranov has the detail.
On Thursday, UN Resident Coordinator in Indonesia, Gita Sabarwal, stated that while Indonesia has made significant progress in achieving the Sustainable Development Goals, challenges remain, particularly in ensuring rights, equality, and empowerment for all women and girls.
The Development Goals of the UN, as you may know, centers on the Sustainable Development Goals, and equality between men and women is central to this agenda. Indonesia is doing better than most countries in the Asia and the Pacific in the achievement of SDGs, though in some areas more acceleration is required, and gender equality is one such area. In a global survey that was done by the UN called We for Women Survey, conducted last year, indicated that three-quarters of Indonesian respondents said that they expected to be better off in 5 years' time. More than two-thirds said that they were in control of their future.
The UN in Indonesia has also collaborated with the government on various women's empowerment programs, ranging from economic strengthening and technological advancement to protection against gender-based violence. In addition, Indonesia is one of the countries with the highest number of female peacekeepers in the UN, with more than 600 active personnel. Gita also stated that through this initiative, gender equality is hoped to become a reality for all.
Indonesia's public radio, Radio Republik Indonesia, launched Musicpreneur program for Indonesian music industry. Rama Fitki has the detail.
Indonesia's public radio, Radio Republik Indonesia, or RRI, and a private company, Nada Bumi, launched the Musicpreneur program on Wednesday, March 5th, to promote the Indonesian local music landscape. The program aims to support micro, small, and medium music industries and provide music business education, as well as promote local musicians' work nationally and globally. At its launch at the RRI headquarters in Jakarta, Minister of Creative Economy Tuku Rifki Harsyah praised the program as a strategic step to support the development of Indonesia's music industry.
Ekonomi kreatif kita ketahui bersama juga saat ini telah menjadi...
The creative economy, as we all know, has now become a new engine for economic growth in various countries, not only in big countries, but also in our neighboring countries like Vietnam, Thailand, and Malaysia. Of course, we know that music is one of the main sectors within the creative economy industry. Therefore, the Musicpreneur program is crucial because this industry not only creates jobs, but also encourages innovation and diversification of the economy itself.
Inovasi dan diversifikasi dari ekonomi itu sendiri.
In his remarks, Harsha believes the program will be a catalyst for the growth of the music-based creative economy. According to him, music is not only about art, but also economic value, which can create jobs, increase earnings, and strengthen global promotion for Indonesian musicians. At the event, the RRI also signed an agreement with the Indonesian Ministry of Creative Economy to develop the Indonesian music industry.
Chairman of the Indonesian Music Award Foundation, Chandra Darusman, noticed several local music awards in various locations in the country. In an interview on the launching of Musicpreneur by Indonesia's public radio, RRI, and a private company, Nada Bumi, at the RRI headquarters in Jakarta on Wednesday, he said the local music landscape in Indonesia are growing, even without support from national scope institutions in big cities like Jakarta.
Di beberapa provinsi itu sudah membuat kegiatan
In some provinces, some people have created their own awarding activities. There are separate music awards. There are awards in Bali and also in Sumatra. This is interesting because local regional music continues to develop and they have one mindset. I don't really need national institutions because I have a lot of followers on YouTube. This is extraordinary.
Ini luar biasa, ya.
Because of the popularity of local awards, Darusman said that his foundation is now trying to embrace them into the annual system of Indonesian Music Award. However, due to the diversity of origins of the works, he said it must be done carefully to prevent potential conflicts. The Indonesian Music Award has been held since 1997 and has become the leading music award in Indonesia ever since. After successfully holding the first and second International Minangkabau Literacy Festival, or IMLF, in early 2023 and 2024, this year, Satu Penak Sumatera Barat and Sumbar Talenta Indonesia Foundation are again holding the third International Minangkabau Literacy Festival. Writers, thinkers, researchers, artists, activists, and students are invited to attend the festival on 8 until 12 May 2025. This was conveyed by Sastri Bakri, chair of the IMLF committee, through a release received in Jakarta on Wednesday night. Satu Pena West Sumatra is a branch of the Indonesian Writers Association. Sastri Bakri said that this festival will be held in Padang, Padang Panjang, and Bukit Tinggi, West Sumatra, and will be attended by 30 speakers. According to her, the festival will gather writers, thinkers, researchers, artists, activists, and students from all over the world to present and discuss the latest trends and developments in the themes of literacy, literature, language, and culture for peace. Activities that will be carried out include poetry readings, art performances, book launches, and others. Regional Counter Cybercrime Coordinator for United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC, Bangkok, Joshua James, stated that Indonesia has a great effort to reduce the possibility of Indonesians getting scammed within the country. During a media briefing in Jakarta on Thursday, he said that with only 5 months of working, Indonesia has managed to establish an anti-scam center to fight against the online scam activities that are targeting Indonesians.
We just came from the Indonesia Anti-Scam Center, and we saw some great efforts to try to reduce the possibility that Indonesians are scammed in Indonesia. And a lot of that work is by making sure partnerships are happening in Indonesia between government agencies. And with the 5 months that they've been active, they've already started to freeze a lot more money leaving Indonesia. And our main challenge is that these criminal groups, the scam centers that are running, are able to get money out of countries and be able to use that money to trick more people into doing business. So Indonesia is already making a really good effort at attempting to stop the money from leaving Indonesia.
Joshua James further stated that Indonesians have suffered twice because of this online scam crime, namely as a victim of scams in Indonesia that are normally happening from scam centers outside the country, and being tricked and lured into working in the scam centers. Therefore, he said that aside from stopping criminals getting access to the money, the UNODC, along with all partners, are working together to get the money back for the victims of online scams. Regional Counter Cybercrime Coordinator for United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC Bangkok, Joshua James said that Indonesia has shown a strong commitment to handle online scam crimes. He said Indonesia is able to form a special team to handle the crime quickly and effectively. During a media briefing in Jakarta, James hoped that what Indonesia has done can be a model for other countries so that the spread of online scam crimes can be stopped before it spreads to many countries.
The Indonesian model that I was talking about is really, at this stage, very early stage, is about getting all of the stakeholders in Indonesia actually talking to each other in real time. So, for example, the Indonesian Counter-Cyber Scam Center has this, what they call a co-location, where they basically brought in all the financial providers. So whenever a claim of a scam happens, the financial providers can be immediately informed and respond at the same day. Now, it seems very easy, but to get all of those people to commit, to have people in the same room, is actually a very big deal. So that's, I think, what Indonesia did really well, is getting all of those people co-located in the same room, and then making sure that they're talking to each other, and then on top of that, now we can support with more tools to make things more efficient and faster.
Previously, the Director of Protection of Indonesian Citizens at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Yuda Nugraha, revealed a number of steps that the Indonesian government has taken in handling online scam cases, namely protection of victims, prosecution, prevention, and partnership domestically, regionally, and internationally. He gave an example in international partnerships. Indonesia has established bilateral cooperation in repatriating Indonesian citizens from Myanmar. Indonesia is also involved in the ASEAN Convention Against Trafficking in Persons and the United Nations Convention Against Transnational Organized Crime. Indonesia welcomes the results of the Arab Summit meeting in Cairo, Egypt on Tuesday, and spokesperson for the Indonesian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Roliansa Sumirat, stated that the Cairo Declaration discussed the efforts of Arab countries in supporting reconstruction in Gaza, Palestine, after the war. According to Sumirat, Indonesia is not a participant in the Arab Summit meeting, but efforts to improve and liberate Palestine have been ingrained in Indonesia's foreign policy.
Yang pasti kita menyambut baik deklarasi Cairo Declaration.
What is certain is that we welcome the Cairo Declaration as a result of the Arab Summit, something that is very close to the hearts of the Indonesian people and government. Because from the beginning we have said, at the right time, we'll be involved in the efforts of international community in the reconstruction of Gaza as a whole.
Arab leaders on Tuesday approved Egypt's post-war plan for the Gaza Strip, countering Trump's plan to depopulate the territory and redevelop it as a beach destination. The $53 billion plan endorsed by Arab leaders at the summit would allow Gaza's roughly 2 million Palestinians to remain in the Strip. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah stated that in a social media after the meeting, the proposed project aims for a comprehensive and just settlement for the Palestinian issue and ends the root of the conflict between Israel and Palestine, guarantees the security and stability of the people of the region, and establishes the Palestinian state. Spokesperson for the Indonesian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Roliansa Sumirat, said that Indonesia doesn't prioritize the presence of foreign aid in development programs carried out domestically. According to him, foreign aid coming to Indonesia is second only to the main source of funding from the state budget. He conveyed this in Jakarta on Tuesday to answer journalist questions regarding the United States' plan to stop global funding through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. He explained that until now, the Indonesian government has not received official information regarding the termination of the aid funds, as well as which sectors will be affected if the funding termination actually occurs.
Namun satu hal yang dapat saya tekankan adalah bahwa selama ini pemerintah Indonesia selalu menempatkan bantuan asing dari negara manapun.
One thing I can emphasize is that so far the Indonesian government has always placed foreign aid from any country as a complement, supplement, and not the main source. The main source of funding for various things needed by Indonesia comes from the state budget.
Roliansa also said that Indonesia is currently in a transition period from a recipient country to a donor country. According to him, as a member of the G20 with a rapidly growing economy, Indonesia tries to position it in every foreign political and economic policy. Therefore, according to him, the Indonesian government continues to strengthen internal cooperation to ensure the implementation of development programs with or without assistance from other countries. You are listening to the news from Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world. Indonesian House of Representatives approves the naturalization of Emil Audero Mulyadi, Dean James, and Joy Perlupesi at the House plenary meeting. Dora Pardede has the detail.
The Indonesian House of Representatives had its 14th plenary meeting of the second session of the 2024 to 2025 period on Thursday. In their meeting, member the House approved the request for consideration of granting citizenship to three prospective players of the Indonesian national football team, Emil Audero, Dan James, and Joy Perlupesi. Deputy Speaker of the House of Representatives, Adis Kadir, at the Parliament Complex in Jakarta Thursday, said that based on presidential letters R-15, R-16, and R-17, Press 03-2025, dated 3 March 2025, the House has assigned Commission 10 and Commission 13 to discuss the naturalization. The two commissions agreed that the three prospective national team players were approved to be granted citizenship of the Republic of Indonesia.
Based on the result of the discussion of Commission X and Commission 13 of the House of Representatives, the House agreed granting consideration to approve Indonesian citizenship to Joy Matish Perlupesi, Emil Audero Mulyadi, and Dean Ruben James. In the meeting, we asked for approval at today's plenary. Whether the application for consideration of granting citizenship of Republic of Indonesia for those three players can be approved? Agreed.
Republik Indonesia atas nama tersebut dapat disetujui. Terima kasih.
Adis Kadir further explained that the naturalization approval will be followed up in accordance with the applicable mechanism. The naturalization process of the three players is accelerated so that they can immediately strengthen the Indonesian national team in the 2026 World Cup qualification. Emil Audero currently plays for Italian club Palermo, has defended big Serie A clubs such as Inter Milan, Juventus, and Como. Meanwhile, Joy Perlupesi has defended FC Twente Netherlands, Sheffield Wednesday England, FC Groningen Netherlands, and now he plays for Lommel SK Belgium. Dan James, a 24-year-old left-back who currently plays for Go Ahead Eagles in the Dutch Eredivisie, is a graduate of the Ajax Amsterdam Academy. Dora Pardede for Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
The Ministry of Women's Empowerment and Child Protection highlights issues of violence against women, including in the digital sphere, and advocates for more gender-responsive policies. Ranoff has the detail.
The Ministry of Women's Empowerment and Child Protection said that various policies have been implemented to support gender equality. However, many issues still require collective attention, including violence against women and challenges in the digital age. Speaking at the International Women's Day 2025 media briefing in Jakarta on Tuesday, Indra Gunawan, expert staff of the Minister of Women, Empowerment and Child Protection for Institutional Relations, state that violence against women, including in the digital realms, remained a major challenge. He said, International Women's Day serves as a reflection on strengthening women's empowerment and adopting global best practices.
And of course, this is something we can continuously work on, as we recognize that many issues concerning violence against women are also linked to digital developments. Digital violence in particular remains a major concern for all of us. Therefore, the commemoration of International Women's Day serves as a moment of reflection for us to collectively assess the goals and efforts in women's development at international level. What initiative we are currently undertaking and how we can showcase and share best practices with the world is a common reference.
Indra stated that Indonesia, as a part of the international community, continues to promote more gender-responsive policies, including in long-term development planning. The Ministry of Women, Empowerment and Child Protection hopes that the commemoration of International Women's Day will raise awareness and spur concrete action by various stakeholders to accelerate women's empowerment and protection of the right. The government also reaffirmed its commitment to work with global organizations such as UN Women and UNDP to ensure the creation of the safer and more equal environment for women in Indonesia.
The Indonesian government plans to provide capital of up to 500 million rupiah to micro, small, and medium enterprises, or MSMEs, that involve in the Free Nutritious Meals, or MBG, program. This funding will come from banks that work with the government and aims to support 30,900 MSMEs catering services. However, Commission 7 of the Indonesian House of Representatives highlighted the importance of clarity of the capital mechanism so as not to burden micro, small, and medium enterprises. Member of Commission 7, Novita Hardani, asked the government to clarify whether the loan management will be carried out by the regional government or the Association of State-Owned Banks.
Nah, ini harus menjadi catatan, ini tidak boleh menjadi beban tambahan.
Now this must be noted, it shouldn't be an additional burden on MSMEs involved in the Free Nutritious Meals ecosystem. So from there, my friends and I from Commission 7 asked what mechanism will be implemented in the distribution of people's business credit worth 500 million rupiah to MSME actors.
Novita also emphasized the importance of ensuring that MSMEs receiving people's business credit can repay properly. He also asked the Ministry of Micro, Small and Medium Enterprises to be involved so that this program is effective, sustainable and the mechanism is implemented immediately. Listener, that's our highlight of the week read by Ahmad Faisal.
Teringatlah dirimu saat kau bersamaku memulai sebuah arti cinta yang sebenarnya. Dan kita terus melangkah, tak terasa semakin jauh. Tanamkan kesejatian hingga kita tak mampu berpisah. Kau kini tak sendiri lagi, dan aku juga telah menjalani seseorang yang mencintaiku. Maafkan keadaan ini, ku tak bisa lagi bersamamu.
Voice of Indonesia, the overseas service of Radio Republic Indonesia, broadcast in 9 language services: English, French, German, Dutch, Spanish, Arabic, Mandarin, Japanese, and Indonesian. Voice of Indonesia is broadcast by shortwave 3325 kHz and 4755 kHz and by streaming on vonews.id and RRI Digital on mobile application. We present various programs for you. Diplomatic Forum, The Session, Indonesian Wonder, Miscellany, Let's Speak Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian Pop and Regional Songs, International Musical Entertainment, as well as news and information about Indonesia and abroad. Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia to the world.
Listener, let's join our interview titled Investment Climate Fund, hosted by Daulat Pane with CEO Landscape Indonesia. Happy listening.
Voice of Indonesia.
Well, listeners and viewers of Voice of Indonesia, we know that United Nations has its own investment fund for the climate change, intends to reduce the carbon emission in the world. And to talk about this here today with me, Bapak Agus Sari. He is the CEO of Landscape Indonesia. How are you, Pak Agus Sari?
I'm very, very well. Thank you, Bapak Ne. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, as we know, Pak Agus, that the world is facing crisis, a climate crisis on what we call the climate change, and then we are the population of the world are responsible to work on this. As the CEO of the Landscape Indonesia, Pak Agus, what are, do you think, the main objectives of the UN Investment Fund for Climate Change, and how are these aligned with the broader goals of the United Nations Climate Change Agenda, including here we in Indonesia, Pak Agus Sari?
Yes, thank you, Bapak Ne. Hello, everybody. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the main agreement for the world to address the climate crisis, has the objective of keeping the changes in the climate due to our activities to the level that is safe for the atmosphere to support lives. And UNFCCC also has a, you know, other agreements. You know, the current one is the Paris Agreement, which has the objectives of keeping the warming of the Earth well below 2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial level, which is about the mid-19th century, and you know, to work its best to keep it well to keep it below 1.5 degrees. And as we know that we have already reached 1.7 last year. In January was the hottest January ever, with a temperature of about 1.75 degrees Celsius, and we have actually reached a temperature of above 1.5 in the past 12-13 months. So basically the objective of the UNFCCC and the Paris Agreement is to keep us alive, more or less. That's what it is.
So that's it. We are still alive. Okay, Pak Agus. Yes, as you mentioned, Pak Agus, that Indonesia also is a signatory to the Paris Agreement, and we Indonesia committing to reducing the global greenhouse gas emission by 29% by 2030. What is the fund's primary focus in Indonesia, the UNFCCC, in terms of climate change? Is it focused on renewable energy, deforestation, or sustainable agriculture, or are there climate-related issues, Pak Agus Sari?
Yes. Well, the UNFCCC and Paris Agreement actually have two components. Yeah, the first one is what is called adaptation to climate change. Climate change is happening no matter what we are doing. Yeah, there are some irreversible impacts. As you have probably noticed, that we have, you know, 3 months of very, very intense rain.
Yes.
Yesterday, Puncak, which is probably, you know, unheard of before, apologize for my cat. My cat is insisting in joining our Zoom. But anyway, you know, Puncak suffers a very severe flood yesterday. So that's also one of the concerns of the world, that, you know, we have been attacked by the severe crisis. Mm. Now, Indonesia's target has been embodied in what is called nationally determined contribution. And the target is to reduce emissions by 32% now, but not anymore 29%.
32%.
One is 32% with our own resources and 43% with international cooperation. The largest sector to which emissions will be reduced is the land use sector. Mm. We have a very, very bold and ambitious target of achieving what is called a net sink by 2030, mm. which means that emissions in the land use sector will be negative. Mm-hmm. By 2030. It's about negative 140 million tons, which basically means that our forest is expected to absorb more emissions than it emits, yeah, in the land use sector.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically means that it provides room for other sectors to have a little bit of emissions.
Okay.
Now the second largest emitter is the energy sector, and that is because our energy sector is heavily carbon intensive.
Mm-hmm.
We still have about 2/3 of our electricity produced using coal, which is the dirtiest of all.
Yes.
And as such, we have very, very high emissions in the energy sector. Actually, our emissions are mostly dominated by the energy sector, but it is the forestry and other land uses sectors that would probably have the highest ambition.
Okay.
To reduce. At the same time, we do have an ambition to reach net zero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that our emissions are at the same level or less than our ability to absorb by 2060 or earlier. And that is also a bold ambition, but that's consistent with basically the findings of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in 2022, that we need to achieve net zero globally.
Yes.
By about 2050. So some would have 2040, some would have 2050, some would have 2060 as their target year.
Okay, as you mentioned, Pa Agus, that net zero in 2060 or 2060 is a bold ambition. So what about the move, the increase from 29% to 32% in 2030, since, as you mentioned also, that we still use 2/3 of our energy by coal, and then we have, you know, vehicles on the roads which mostly use the fossil And then also we the forestation is still on place. So what do you say?
Well, I'm a little bit more optimistic about the forest and other land uses. I think we are on track in achieving the net sink target. We have some, concerning trends in the past couple of years that, the rate of deforestation has increased slightly in the past couple of years, and that might actually disrupt our track to net sink by 2030. I'm a lot more concerned about, as you mentioned, Pavane, the energy sector, because our energy sector is very, very carbon intensive. One of many ways for us to do that is the just energy transition, which is probably shown by the JETP program, the Just Energy Transition Partnership, which was launched at the G20 in Bali in 2021, in which that the program was to be mobilizing financing to the tune of about $20 billion, and that was the largest ever climate deal given to one country. No other country has been pledged that much money for energy transition investments. One of the flagship program in JETP is what is called early retirement of coal power plants.
Okay.
So basically our coal power plants would be retired earlier than they would be in its natural trajectory, so that to avoid future emissions. That's basically the big program now that I'm hoping to be successful.
Okay.
For us to be able to achieve our targets.
Yes, Agus, as you mentioned that we had the flag in the G20 in Bali in 2021 on energy transition. So how much do you think all those countries who have the flag at the time doing are working on their track?
I've seen a mix. Performances when it comes to fulfilling this major and ambitious program, which is called JETP. $20 billion is a lot.
Yes.
And with the U.S., moving out or exceeding the Paris Agreement and exceeding from JETP,
yeah,
of course there's a major blow into the capacity to finance the entire $20 billion. Luckily, the European Union comes in to replace the U.S. Now the JETP is a co-led by Japan and Germany. It used to be co-led by Japan and the U.S. Structuring financing to the tune of $20 billion is complex. So I would not expect it to be, to happen very quickly. It is delayed, but it's naturally delayed, I would say, because of the amount of money that's involved. But already JETP has managed to finance a couple of renewable energy programs, right? Especially geothermal. So it's a slow process, I would say, and it's slower than expected, or I would say slower as expected, because a lot of people are not expecting anything
Up to 2030, Pak Agus?
Up to 2030, yes. Yes. So we do have a regulation now that we can only build coal power plants until 2030. Beyond 2030, we will not be allowed to build any more new coal power plants, which means that we are going to reach our peak by 2030, and then by 2060, we will have zero coal-fired power plants. That's basically the plan under JEFP.
Okay. And we are, Indonesia, I mean, the Indonesian government's policy are on track to reach this?
I would say there are a lot of temptations to not achieve that target. Because early retirement of coal power plants is expensive.
Yes.
Yeah? One calculation shows that for a typical coal power plant in Indonesia at about 1 gigawatt coal fired power plants retired 5 years early, that would reduce the NPV of the power plant by $70 million.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, retiring power plant early is a losing business.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a profitable business. And that's because, in the 5 years of the coal power plant being retired early, we lose the potential income, right?
Yes.
So it's very difficult to finance a losing business using loan and equity. No investors would be crazy enough to invest in a business that is certainly losing. Yeah, so we need to find innovative ways to finance early retirement of our coal power plants beyond commercial investments that are readily available right now. That's basically the reason that there is strong temptation to just abandon the early retirement program.
Yes.
As you have heard, our Minister of Energy and Mineral Resources said that we have a lot of coal. Why shouldn't we use all of it?
Yes.
My response to the minister basically says that the Stone Age didn't stop because we ran out of stone. So coal age shouldn't stop because we ran out of coal. We should stop because there's better technology,
yes,
cleaner technology, cheaper technology.
Yes, we have target for that.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Yes, Pak Agustari, this is not only the task, the responsibility of the government, of course, but there should be the involvement of private sectors or NGOs. So how do you access the UN Investment Fund for Climate Change approach, partnerships, say, with the NGO, communities, local business, or other investment funds?
Yeah, I've been lucky to have been involved in putting together a proposal for the government to the Green Climate Fund, which is the fund managed under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It's a large fund. It's basically $100 billion fund, which is sizable. What I found in my experience is that it is so complex in getting access to that fund. The whole process would probably easily take about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, we don't know what is happening in the next 5 years, and we don't even know who our president is going to be in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So, we don't know whether the program is still relevant in the next 5 years. So that's what is going on with the UN fund. First is that it is, I would say, severely insufficient. Second is, even with the existing resources that it is already managing, the way to access it is a bit more complex than most countries would be able to manage. Yeah. As you know, there's a lot of assessment that the world would need $1.3 billion of fund per year.
Yes.
And the fund under the UNFCCC is way below it. Yeah. It's about $100 billion right now, or even less than $100 billion. The pledge was to reach $100 billion per year, but it's not even close to it. And the current agreement is to achieve $300 billion by 2035. 2035 is still 10 years from now, and we shouldn't even take a pledge that long that seriously. So we are severely underfunded and severely badly managed, I would say.
Okay. Agus Sari, as you mentioned, you are directly involved on this, and then I believe that Landscape Indonesia that you lead also work on this. That, so do you have a successful story? I want to hear something on the successful story on the well, already we reach in terms of the UN investment funds for climate change here in Indonesia.
Yes. Before Paris Agreement, we have Kyoto Protocol, and we have a number of ways for the developed countries transferring money, yeah, transferring funds and resources to developing countries. One of which is through carbon market. And if we are talking about resource transfer in terms of grants, and compare it with resource transfer through carbon market, I would say that carbon market far exceeds the amount of grants. So unfortunately, carbon market mechanism under the Paris Agreement only got approved last year by the UNFCCC. So the mechanism has just been developed, and it has not been executed fully. But I still have high hopes that when it is executed fully, we will be able to find sufficient resources to finance our decarbonization initiatives. Mm. The early retirement for our coal power plants, for example, could be financed partly or even mostly by carbon market.
Okay. Agus, since we are coming to the end of this interview, but would you make a closing statement on this regarding the UN investment funds for climate change, and especially what we are going doing here in Indonesia, Pak Agus Sari?
Yes. First is that we should take the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change and other climate agreements seriously. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't even be disturbed by the news that the U.S. Has left the agreement.
Yes.
I think we should be able to do whatever we should need to do without the U.S. The second is that we need to be innovative in finding resources to finance our decarbonization, and I believe that we have our own resources domestically in Indonesia, especially since renewables are already competitive in terms of cost against coal and other fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to focus on deploying more renewables in Indonesia. And third, of course, we need to find ways to manage the impacts of climate change that we have already felt today. Mm-hmm. And it will eventually disrupt our, you know, our food security, our energy security, and many other sectors. So we need to pay careful attention to the impact as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pak Agus Sari. This is very, you know, interesting conversation, but we still, we have a very limited time. Maybe we will discuss this, talk about this more and more later in another time. Once again, thank you very much, Pak Agus Sari, for your time.
Thank you. Have a good morning. Bye.
Thank you. Well, listeners and viewers of Voice of Indonesia, that was my very interesting conversation with Dr. Agus Sari, the CEO of Landscape Indonesia, regarding the UN Investment Funds for Climate Change. And I'm Dalat Pane. See you next time.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, finally, we must end our togetherness, and thank you very much for your listening. I am Ahmad Faisal. Have a nice weekend, and bye-bye.
Jakarta から Korewa Voice of Indonesia です。日本語で放送されている Voice of Indonesia は、インドネシアに関するニュース、情報、エンターテインメントだけでなく、さまざまな情報を提供します。周波数 332kHz および4755kHz で、またはウェブサイト www.foinews.id より LED デジタルアプリケーション KU で毎日放送を視聴したりアクセスしたりできます。Selamat malam, kong bangwa. 今日、私、イーサンが1時間の日本語放送をお送りいたします。今日はニュース、インドネシアの音楽、それともいろいろなインドネシアの情報をお届けします。次はニュースをお伝えします。引き続き周波数 335kHz や 4755kHz からフォイスオフインドネシアの放送をお聞きください。リスナー皆さん、ニュースです。それでは最初のニュースです。インドネシアはアラブ首脳会議の結果を歓迎したことについてお伝えします。インドネシアは3月4日火曜日にエジプトカイロで開催されたアラブ首脳会議の結果を歓迎しました。インドネシア外務省の報道官であるロリアンシャ・スミラ・シーはカイロ宣言が戦後のパレスチナ・ガザ地区の復興を支援するアラブ小国の取り組みについて話し合ったと述べました。スミラット氏によると、インドネシアはアラブ首脳会議の参加国ではないものの、パレスチナの支援と解放に向けた努力はインドネシアの外交政策に深く根付いているということです。また、インドネシアは当初からガザ復興支援に関与することを表明してきました。
Namun satu hal yang dapat saya tekankan adalah bahwa selama ini pemerintah Indonesia selalu menempatkan bantuan asing dari negara manapun itu sebagai sifatnya pelengkap, suplemen, dan bukan sumber utama. Sumber utama pendanaan dari berbagai hal yang dibutuhkan Indonesia tentu berasal dari APBN sendiri, dari dana yang ada di Indonesia.
確かなことはアラブ首脳会議の成果としてのカイロ宣言を歓迎するということです。これはガザ復興支援に直接関係しており、インドネシア国民と政府にとって非常に重要な問題です。私たちは以前から適切なタイミングで国際社会の努力に参加し、ガザ復興全体に貢献することを表明してきました。火曜日の首脳会議でアラブ諸国の指導者たちはエジプトが提案した戦後のガザ地区復興計画を承認し、トランプ大統領が推進したガザ地区の人口を減らし観光地として再開発する計画に対抗しました。この首脳会議で承認された530億米ドルの計画はおよそ200万人のパレスチナ人がガザ地区に泊まることを可能にします。エジプトのアブドル・ファタエル・シシ大統領は会議後の SNS 投稿でこの計画がパレスチナ問題の包括的かつ公正な解決を目指し、イスラエルとパレスチナの対立の根本的な原因を解消し、地域の人々の安全と安定を保障し、パレスチナ国家の国立を目指すものであると述べました。それでは次のニュースです。スラバヤ高速鉄道プロジェクトへの民間企業の参加を推進することについてお伝えします。インドネシア運輸大臣であるルディ・プルワガンディ氏は、国家予算の負担を軽減するため、ジャカルタ・バンドンからスラバヤへと延伸する高速鉄道プロジェクトへの民間企業の関与を促しました。政府は現在、若者の育成を含むより重要な社会プログラムに予算を優先的に配分しています。一方、運輸省鉄道総局長リサル・ワサル氏は、このプロジェクトに関する2つの調査が進行中であると述べました。一つは既存の高速鉄道を延長する案、もう一つはかつて日本の投資家によって検討された準高速鉄道案です。プロジェクトが完全に民間資本で運営される場合は直接の委託や官民パートナーシップ方式による入札が可能となります。それでは最後のニュースです。 デジタル変革にはサイバーセキュリティ対策が必要についてお伝えします。インドネシア国家サイバー暗号庁または BSSN のヌグロホスリスティオブリ長官は電子政府システムにおける人材強化について協議するため、行政改革省またはパンエルベのリニー・ウィディアンティ大臣と会談しました。ヌグロホ長官はデジタル変革の加速にはサイバーセキュリティの強化が不可欠であり、サービスの安定を脅かす脅威を最小限に抑えるべきだと強調しました。電子政府システムの持続的な